This is Maurice Better. I'm interviewing former Dean of UW Extension, Harold Montross, in Madison, Wisconsin. Today's date is February 7th, 2004. I wanted to begin the discussion with your graduate and undergraduate education. Where did you get your degrees from?
Well, I attended the University of Iowa as a freshman, but I transferred to Iowa Wesleyan College in Iowa and graduated from Iowa Wesleyan undergraduate work.
Well, why did you choose Iowa Wesleyan?
Well, at that time, this was a different time. The war was on.
World War II.
I was in about my, well, I'll start in a different way. About 2 months after Pearl Harbor, I enlisted in the Navy. This was in, what would this be, about 42, somewhere in there. I enlisted in the Navy as an officer training candidate. And the first order was report back to your university and finish your degree. You're on inactive duty until you finish your degree. I was at Iowa Wesleyan at the time because when I went down there just with a friend to explore it, I had to figure out some way to pay for my undergraduate education. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I secured a room and board job, and I got another job. I was in athletics at the time. That's what really got me into school in the first place. I had a assistant to the coach position, so I had the two jobs, which supported me, and I borrowed the tuition money, and I was off. So that's the reason I was at Iowa Wesleyan, because of the work opportunities there. They were better than at the University of Iowa. But I enlisted in the Navy at the time, and they sent me back to school. And I finished there and then went into officers training school. And eventually was a communication officer on an LST in the South Pacific. Once I did that, of course, the war was over and the GI Bill came in, and so I coached in Iowa for a couple of years, and I coached in Wisconsin. I was an athletic coach.
What sport?
I had about everything.
Everything.
These are small schools. I had the girls and the boys, mm-hmm. basketball and football and softball and baseball. Eventually I come up to Wisconsin because they were offering a joint degree in education and physical education. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't certain which way I was going to go at the time. So I come up here and started that program of a master's degree in physical education and education. Well, after I got through that, I decided as long as I had the money and the GI Bill, I'd go right on to the PhD. In education. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially what happens and what I did. My wife taught school at Iowa and Wisconsin while I was in school, so mm-hmm. that worked.
Well, what got you into extension?
It's interesting how some kind of, you might call, chance events have a major influence on some of life's major decisions. After graduation, that would be in 1952, I was looking for a position, and sometime in the summer of 1952, I had a call from University Extension to whether or not I was interested in a research project that they were doing up in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. This was essentially a research project to test whether or not you could help correspondence study students better complete their program if you gave them some kind of help and assistance on the spot. It was funded by one of the regents. Well, the administrator in extension had called my major professor. My major professor recommended me for the job, and that's how I got into university extension. Mm-hmm. By chance.
Uh-huh. It's life. It's yes. Usually as you say.
Yep.
Well, then did you move into administration after that?
Yes, I went down to, I was there 2 years, we finished the project, and I wrote the project up. Then I went down to the Racine Center, Racine two-year center, as assistant director of that center.
Mm-hmm.
I was down there 2 years, and they asked me to come to Madison to be an assistant to another administrator, Ted Shannon, who it was,
mm-hmm.
to be an assistant, I think we called it director of informal instruction at the time.
He was assistant to Shannon, was assistant director, was he, under Adolfson?
Or well, he was director of informal instruction when I come up here,
uh-huh.
and I come in as assistant director of informal instruction.
I see.
That would have been in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
And
Adolfson was the director.
My director, yeah, I guess he was director. He wasn't dean. We didn't have very many administrative titles at the time.
Yeah, no, the files seem to show that his title was director.
Yeah, yes, it was. That's true. The extension did not carry those generally assigned administrative titles in that period, all the period before it, for that
mm-hmm.
matter. So that's how I got started in administration.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of that chance event was asked to come to meet the president of what was UCLA, I guess. Because I was nominated for a position there. Well, I didn't go, but I could have gone to California,
mm-hmm.
maybe an entirely different career.
Mm-hmm. Was that an extension in California, or that was another?
In the School of Education.
The School of Education.
Yeah.
When did you become the dean of, and how many deans were there, and what was the organization at that
time? Well, remember, this is 50 years ago.
Right.
Shannon, I think, became a dean of University Extension. And I think at one point I was associate dean of University Extension. And that must have been at about 58. So that went on for some time until the merger of University Extension and Cooperative Extension.
They were separate. Probably.
They were separate.
Mm-hmm.
Co-op was, of course, in the College of Agriculture.
Oh, okay.
Extension was off by itself with its own faculty, many of them joint with the Madison campus. And I didn't become dean then until the merger. I think that was in 66. So I became dean of University Extension at the merger time. At the time, the head of Extension became a chancellor.
Was that Shannon then at that
No, that was, they brought in someone new. I'll think of his name eventually, but it wasn't Shannon. Shannon did not move into the administration at that time. There were, I believe...
Was that Boyle? Patrick Boyle?
No. It was long before Boyle.
Oh, okay.
Long before any of them. See, they had at least two chancellors before, three chancellors before Boyle.
Oh, realize that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, what was your role as Dean of Extension? What did an extension consist of at that point when you took over
There were the co-op extension side also had a dean. And I think they had one other program area that for a time that had a dean as its head. But the university extension portion included all of the professions, that is medicine, nursing, pharmacy, and the arts and music, that whole area. I said the professionals, so the nursing, engineering, medicine. It was a fairly large faculty, and at one stage, perhaps a little later in that time, it had about a $25 million budget with a large income requirement, but nevertheless it had a large budget. Now at that time the School for Workers went somewhere in another division. I didn't have responsibility for School for Workers. Well,
where was that, do you recall?
I think it was with Pulver. I think it was Pulver, Dean Pulver. Yes, it was, and I'll tell you another story about that. So I didn't have administrative responsibility then. I did while I was associate dean and assistant director of the other unit. The first contact I had with School for Workers was when I was in Rhinelander. I had called Ed Young to come up, and he was in School for Workers mm-hmm. Extension at the time.
Yes.
To come up to Rhinelander and talk to the, I think that's a paper mill up there.
Yes, I think so.
I think so.
Yes.
And that was my first contact. So I had known Ed Young a long time.
You had never heard, had you heard of the School for Workers prior to that time at all?
Only through acquaintance with what was in University mm-hmm. Extension as mm-hmm. a part of what was going on. Mm-hmm. I hadn't had any contact with anyone other than, mm-hmm. at that time, Ed.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I had many contacts with Ed after that, both when he was chancellor and when he was still in the School for Workers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were saying that you thought the school was not exactly in your division. So what were the divisions, or how was Extension, or what was cut up, so to speak?
How was it split up?
Split up, I guess, yes.
They were headed by a chancellor. I believe they had three academic, you could call them academic deans. They had program responsibility.
Okay.
That was myself, the co-op side, and I think it was, I'm not sure what they called the other one. It was somewhere in the human resources area that Pulver headed, and that's where the School for Workers went at the time of the merger.
Which was what year again?
66.
66.
Yeah, 1966.
Who mandated the merger? What brought about
Harrington, the... President Harrington. And he, it was, in some ways, it was a natural thing to do. In other ways, it wasn't. You see, there was a major difference in the philosophy between University Extension and Co-op Extension, for one thing. And it, much of the time it didn't mix well. I had two units of Co-op Extension in University Extension as dean, and that was the 4-H program, statewide 4-H program, and the statewide family living program. That has gone through a number of names. Mm-hmm. They have a different title for that now.
Yeah.
That was much different, although that worked quite well. There was always some confusion in the mixture because of the income requirement of many of the extension units, and that wasn't true in the co-op units. So we were often dealing with income subjects that weren't too interesting to the co-op on the co-op side.
They had federal funding, the co-op
federal
side.
Federal and local funding.
Local funding.
There, most of those, all those agents had county money and their salary.
Yes.
So this is a much different arrangement. Mm-hmm.
But you and Extension and whatever this other third division was called under Clover, you had income requirements.
Sure.
And things.
Yeah, we had income requirements. Yeah. But it, also there was much, and that might move us into the Green Bay thing, there was much mm-hmm. pressure. I'll back up a moment. The original notion was that the combined University Extension would represent the whole of the university system. So, in a sense, we were responsible for the extension function in Green Bay and in Milwaukee and all over. And we allocated funds to that. That's how you got into mm-hmm. Green Bay. We allocated some money to Green Bay to do that. So that all was a part of the total arrangement. There were psychological reasons why that didn't work very well. Mainly the fact that the institutions, especially the Madison campus, felt they were suddenly cut off from for some of them, a major operation, and it was assigned to another chancellor, and it was difficult for many of those chancellors to split that extension responsibility with an extension chancellor. And I think that's a natural reaction. Before I retired, Boyle and I spent a lot of time traveling to every institution to try to turn that around and assign more responsibility academically to the institution and sort of divorce it from the extension academic unit. And I understand that's working better now. Mm-hmm. The Madison campus now has an extension program that's listed as a Madison campus extension program.
I see, yes, and all the other campuses, I think, list their extension, but they also have outreach or programs, I think, mm-hmm. isn't it? Well, how did that, I mean, that's almost like an extension program, isn't
it? I don't know what that is.
Oh, okay.
20 years I retired, 20 years ago. Yeah, but at my point of retirement, as I mentioned, that last year we spent the time going around to the institutions mm-hmm. and starting that procedure.
Well, maybe I got it wrong. Didn't Madison have some kind of I don't know if they called it outreach.
Yes,
or
they did. Joe Corey was responsible for the Madison campus.
Now, how did that differ from extension?
It didn't greatly, except they didn't really have any programs. That much of that was to try to coordinate with the extension units. They didn't have any of that, very little programming.
Okay.
So the programming was an extension built program that was advertised that way. Mm-hmm. But as I indicated, you know, it really couldn't work quite that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did Extension have people, since the idea was to make it a university-wide Extension program, were there Extension representatives on all the campuses besides Milwaukee and Madison, and of course myself in Green Bay, but I just covered the School for Worker program.
Yes, there were Extension representatives on every campus, and we had periodic or perhaps monthly meetings with all of those extension people. Much of it was in Madison, but we had the person up in Green Bay, Marge Engelman.
Yes,
was a part of that. She would come down to the monthly meetings. Maybe they weren't monthly, but they were periodically.
Mm-hmm.
She would come down, as would the Milwaukee campus rep. Those people were all paid for by the other institution, but they were considered a part of that statewide extension mechanism.
Well, did other departments, like calling the School for Workers a department within Extension, did they have representatives such as myself on the campuses? I thought I was kind of unique out there.
No.
Aside from...
No, we had, every campus had some kind of a split like yours. There were varying degrees of fit. You know, yours was somewhat odd because the School for Workers was a unique program on the Madison campus. and they didn't have labor faculty split out from other units like economics or something that were natural fits. So I don't think the School for Workers in Green Bay was, it wasn't a very natural fit academically. But there were others that way. But there were joint appointments. I was working with departments constantly on building joint appointments on the campuses, allocating money to that function.
Were there like joint appointments in economics and joint appointments in, say, sociology or joint appointments?
They were like that, but I don't, the arts was pretty well represented. Engineering wouldn't be, because it's pretty much a single campus. Mm-hmm. You know, medicine, nursing was pretty well represented.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever they had other academic units, and then I think there were a few in LNS other than the arts,
mm-hmm.
But they were pretty well scattered all over the state, and it worked some places and not as well in others.
Mm-hmm.
But the same overriding problem of how does that institution identify those programs as their academic programs was always present.
And this started again, you said, what year was this now? Was this starting from the merger?
Starting from the merger.
That was the intent, was to
the 1966.
Push it out to the campuses.
Yep, okay. That was a, mm-hmm. a part of the philosophical development of mm-hmm. one statewide extension.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it developed. I don't know. No, I don't know that. Well, there has been a history of that written by Dave Cronin. Might be something in there
mm-hmm.
that would
mm-hmm.
Get another assessment of how it turned out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, when did the School for Workers come under your jurisdiction?
Well,
it must sounds like another merger must have taken place.
No, it didn't. I'll put it directly. The School for Workers always had a somewhat contentious faculty. And I don't know too many of the details, and I don't want to get too much into it. But my understanding was that the dean of the unit that was responsible for the School for Workers wanted to get a new chairman. And there are certain ways you could do that in the School for Workers, but you had to be very careful. So the upshot of it was, to settle it, from my point of view, is to transfer it into our division.
And this is when Ed Young became?
No, this was after Ed Young. This was, Bob Ozan was chairman at the time. So it transferred into our division with Bob was still chairman.
Okay, but we're talking now, is it
I don't know what year that
late 70s now?
Must have been, whenever that occurred. I don't remember the exact date of that. It must have been in the 70s.
Okay. Because you didn't change, Bob must have remained chairman.
He remained chairman, yes. I had no reason to change him at the time. We had another point in that history, though. We had another short-time contentious period when the faculty on a close vote asked for George to be changed.
Yes.
And I didn't do that.
Well, do you remember the earlier contention, what that was? When you first got to school, what was the?
The only thing I know, I don't know what. I do not know. All I know is that the dean's position was he wanted to change chairman.
And this is Pulver, then. Dean Pulver at this time, or is
that would have been Pulver? Yes. They wanted to change chairman.
Okay, and in lieu of that, instead of that, they just transferred the school into. Well, eventually they must have transferred his other departments or whatever they were called into, because that kind of disappeared.
It did, but it, not at that time, but later it did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was perfectly fine with me. I was very happy with school workers. I liked working with the school workers. I had worked with them before. I thought the collection of those labor leaders, where we met, I don't know whether we met once a year or twice a year or mm-hmm. what, was a very useful meeting. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't a problem for me. I enjoyed mm-hmm. working with school workers. Mm-hmm.
Where was Extension housed, in the school for worker housed at this, this early period?
Well, Extension in the early days was housed over there in the ag, home ec, with home ec, home economics in those early days. And then at, when the building was built, and it must have been in the very early 70s, a new Extension building. Mm-hmm. And then the school for workers got the center. What is that, Friedrich Center?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For holding the programs, which I suppose is another bit of history that indicates some of the clout that labor might well have and did use at that time mm-hmm. to try to get a separate kind of meeting program for the school. I'm not remember that year. I don't know what year that mm-hmm. was. It was very early though. It was before other, I think Management Institutes was over in those old World War II Quonsets at the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there was some feeling that labor was getting the best of them at the time.
I see. Well, labor, some of the summer schools were over there in those Quonsets as well, I think. They housed
In the early days.
In the early, yeah.
Yeah.
And ag short yeah. courses must have had a dormitory or something.
Yes.
I've seen reference to that.
Yes, yes. Now, on the advisory, on that labor advisory committee, when this other issue came up on with George and the faculty vote, I talked to John Schmidt. I talked to him occasionally. And he simply indicated that's your choice. We're not going to interfere. So they didn't.
Mm-hmm. But they did push for the building.
Apparently. Oh yes, they pushed for the building.
Do you recall anything about that?
No, that was too early in my career to remember much about that.
Who did they negotiate? Who do you think they negotiated with?
They negotiated with the president.
Oh, okay.
So. Yeah, that's how it came out.
So that was really out of Extension's hands.
Yeah, because basically. That was a campus dorm.
Yeah, I see. And
we had nothing to do with that dorm.
Uh-huh.
So it had to be with the campus administration.
Okay. Yeah.
I think there were times, of course, when the labor movement was asked to do various things for the university.
Mm-hmm.
I never was a part of that. That was done in other ways, which is not unusual. But that's neither here nor there, I guess.
Well, we always argued. I remember there was one year, this was after I came on, so it must have been mm-hmm. in sometime in the 80s, the school got the labor movement to get extra money for the school through the state legislature. And the story was that then Extension retaliated by lowering the budget of the school for workers by the amount they had gotten from the legislature. Is that ring a bell?
I know nothing about that. I never. That would be interesting to see what the source that was.
It may just be an old wives' tale. I don't know. It was a story that went around.
I never. Recall, at least during my time, changing budgets except in the late 80s. the engineering program was not making its income. Well, others were too. So we had to make some cuts in my every program, for that matter, somewhat in every program. Mm-hmm. That might have come from that source, I don't know. But that was done across the board. It had nothing mm-hmm. to do with specifically at the School for Workers. I didn't know anything about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, just talking about the budget, it seems that in the 50s and the 60s, maybe even into the 70s, there was a lot of money. And then after the 70s, we were talking about budgets. What the sources were. It seems to me that the School for Workers, maybe this is too early on, but after World War II, got some money from maybe the federal government through certain agencies of the. Is that?
I don't recall. Okay. I wouldn't recall anything on their budget, except when it come into the division on the second time. I think that was must have been in the 70s. But it wasn't unusual for various units to get money of various kinds through grants and mm-hmm. submissions. But it is true that University Extension in those early years in 80 had some budget problems. But by the time I retired, it had a plus balance. And that's all I recall.
Is this because the state share of the budget was declining?
Or? No, it's because there was a drop in programming. There was a drop in income. The state dollars were fairly consistent.
Mm-hmm. So most of it, and this was, i.e.
It was a program loss.
What was happening?
I don't remember. But there was a period there where the professions were not faring as well as they had been during the 70s, weren't growing in the same way. Mm-hmm. That was a part of Extension's problem that, I guess it's a part of whole higher education's problem. That is, higher education has to get tuition to function as well. Mm-hmm. But we had to generate a huge portion of our total budget through income. In other words, we had to generate faculty salaries through mm-hmm. income. And when you weren't generating it, you were in real problem.
What percentage of the budget came from in state dollars, typically?
Well,
if you can say.
I do not know the exact percent. It was well under 50%. My guess is around 30% of the cost.
Yeah. And that kind of shrunk, I think, as
it shrunk, and the program shrunk. Yeah. So that's a major disaster. But it come back in the later part of the latter part of the 80s.
The budget or the program or both?
Both. Mostly the program. Very little budget. I mean, state budget.
Yeah.
It was mostly the program. That made it difficult to function at times, and it made it difficult to know exactly how to look at your mission. We tried hard to attract. We had a women's program we put money into. I think we had three women there. That had to be almost 100% supported. Mm-hmm. That made a small income, but that had to come from somewhere out of the budget. It wasn't funded as a new objective. So I think the way that was structured and the way the income was structured, it made it difficult to really deal with a mission as you might think you mm-hmm. ought to or want to.
Is that different than the, say, the academic side of the university?
It's different than the academic side in the sense that they, of course, they have to have students, but that percent is much smaller against their total budget. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, they're going through the same kind of a problem with the university. I don't know how extension is faring in this mm-hmm. at all. I don't know whether they're being cut as well.
Well, they're taking cuts. They're not, at this point, down to the bone yet, but I think they're, tightening. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned when you first came, there was no such thing as, not even official titles for the administration.
No.
They were called chancellors and that kind of thing.
No academic title.
No, and it struck me that looking at the School for Worker, I'm wondering, and maybe this is true for all extension programs, did people have academic titles early on?
No.
Was there things like tenure and that? When did all that, when I came on, of course, there were titles, there was tenure.
That happened with the merger of co-op and university extension. The faculty who had rank in the main were in extension. Prior to that were faculty who had rank on the Madison campus.
Well, that's where they got their...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are many of those because many of those were also the center system heads of history or English, and they also became extension heads of the same unit.
I see. So they have a separate contract? Was that part of their contract to work in both?
It was just a split appointment and assumed that they would work in both, yes. In the main, most of them, I'm sure, spent most of their time as center administrators. The English, there was a joint appointment with a professor of English on the Madison campus who ran the center's systems English program, hired the faculty, helped determine the curriculum, the books, and all that stuff.
That would apply to Ed Young as well. He was in the economics department and the director of the School for Workers. Was that a joint?
He had a joint appointment, yep.
How about, I don't know if you would know this, but before him it was a General Schwarzhaber, I think, was the
yes.
head.
That
was he...
before my time, I remember that.
I wondered if he had a joint appointment.
I don't
appointment.
Know. That I do not know. But Ed Young was an economics professor.
Okay, and I think that applied to Bob Ozan.
Yeah, Bob was
eventually,
too.
As well.
Yeah, and then at the merger, there was a major push to set up a faculty governance system for extension.
What year was this again?
66.
66, okay.
So that, we set up the procedures for faculty governments, for faculty rank, securing a faculty rank. Much of it, I think we used mostly the divisional committees on the Madison campus for the final say.
On tenure
decisions. Mm-hmm. The faculty in a department would recommend. They would go off to the procedures that they had to. They'd go through the hearings and the committees, and eventually it would go to the chairman. Would send it to the divisional committee for their recommendation. I got rank in education, blanketed in as professor of education under that arrangement, and that went to the divisional committee. I don't know whether it went to the Madison campus. It went to the Madison campus, but that may have been just an anomaly, I don't know. Mm-hmm. In any case, it went to the divisional committee, mm-hmm. and so that's how it occurred, and that's how it occurred with all the faculty. Mm-hmm. We didn't set up separate divisional committees.
But that did happen later.
Yes.
Within extension.
Yes, but not Not in the beginning.
Not in the beginning.
And it was a little difficult in the beginning because those divisional committees were looking at different criteria, and not everyone had the publications to back them up.
Yeah, I always wondered about the view, particularly that the Madison campus took vis-a-vis the faculty on the extension,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In terms of their, whether yeah. they had the credibility of...
They didn't always, and that was a problem. Some of our faculty had sufficient publications. I had a number of publications that apparently went through, but those were just happenstance. I didn't deliberately work on those. So in any case, that's how it occurred. And the faculty governance, I think, worked well. They went through the procedures, and in the main, you took faculty's recommendations on chairman, various things, except that. That was about the only occasion when I didn't was in the School for Workers.
And that you're connecting this to the case of George Hagelin?
Yeah, yeah.
You care to say why?
I felt that George was doing a reasonable job. He was doing a good job. I felt that there was so much conflict within the department that I wasn't sure of what was taking place, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get to that stage, you know, you have to be careful, I guess. But that seemed to me be what was happening in the department. See, for the department would send me their merit ratings for me to interpret and mm-hmm. send back to the chairman. Here's what the faculty said about
mm-hmm.
each other.
Mm-hmm.
They did that after I retired. They come in the mail, and I would go through and write down the numbers and send it back.
Yes, I remember that.
So that seemed to be a part of the problem there, that there was a good deal of conflict between faculty members. There were different factions. Some tried to say neutral.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what was happening. I mean, under those circumstances, I felt it was best to leave George in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In terms of the Extension Senate and University Committee, I guess, was that all set up in 66 as well?
No, that would come later. Well, I think they started on that. They had a university, uh-huh. yeah, they had a university committee, and that was a part of the
Well, 66. But may it was limited to extension, though. I think they were on the Madison
no,
University Committee.
No,
yeah.
No. No, that was Extension University.
Yeah, and that all, well, I guess they must have created an Extension Senate, a University Committee, and then the various boards, or I forget, what would you call them, to approve a tenure and that kind of stuff, all
eventually that all come together, yes.
In the 70s, do you think?
It must have been in the 70s. It didn't happen right away. It took some time to get things organized. It must have been in the 70s. I don't know. There must be some other historical record of that somewhere.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you also, I get tied in with this. I noticed that there was a lot of turnover in the early, this goes back to the early years of the School for Workers in the 50s mm-hmm. and the 60s. And I've gotten an impression that people really didn't see it as a career, so to speak, and that the pay, I don't think, was very high. I don't think there was a retirement plan, anything like that. When you were dean, did Extension have a retirement? Were Extension people in the retirement system? And
Yes, we were in the retirement system.
You
from
think?
The point in which you were hired.
Was that always, as far as you know, always the case? When you first came, your first day in extension, when you first, was there a retirement plan?
Yeah, I come in 52, and so all those years were counted when it came to retirement. So extension staff were in. And in that sense, they were no different than the Madison campus.
Okay, so that was, because I remember when this Schwartzhaber retired, sounded like that they went out to, or when he was planning to retire, I think he passed away before he actually retired.
I think so, yes.
That they went out to, or at least it was a move to set up a fund for him for retirement, which indicated to me that maybe he wasn't in the retirement system. Of course, this is his 47, 48.
Well, I don't know.
But when you came in 52,
they were. Yeah, we were in.
Everybody was in.
Everybody was in that. Except the civil service staff. The classified staff were in another system. Secretaries.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, they were in another system, but the faculty and academic staff, even the academic staff, I think were in the same.
Mm-hmm.
You had
you want a few minutes here to say salaries. What about salaries and things? Were there big improvements in, say, in the 30 years or so, 50s, 60s, 70s?
There were differences in the university salaries, just as there are now. In other words, the doctors are at a higher salary than women's education, even though they may have had the same rank. That's true now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall that the School for Workers were ever out of line with the general salary adjustments. I don't recall any effort to make a major change in School for Workers' salaries either.
Did they look to the economics department on campus as a measure of, because there was this tie to the economics department on campus.
I'm sure Bob did, because of his tie there. I'm sure he looked at the campus salaries. They were always higher than extension salaries, whether it was School for Workers or some other area.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it was. And many departments did try to bring it up to match, but that wasn't always successful. We had the salary allocations were in a lump sum to the division, and they were partial to the I suppose they shouldn't say a lump sum, they were determined by the faculty themselves. But when the administration assigns a 6% merit increase, that becomes a lump sum. We had a way of helping the faculty salaries for a while in our division. And that's the reason this shouldn't be exposed for several years, maybe. In any case, we would list open positions. Open positions at the time generated merit. So for supplies and expense dollars, we would list open positions and generate more merit. So we were averaging more merit than the others, the other units. But finally, central administration caught on to that and closed that out. But we had 2 or 3 years of that.
When was this? Roughly
66, probably 7, 68, 69. So we were able to give a little larger increases. But that went by the wayside. Because we had such a large supply and expense budget, it was easy to put in empty positions for supply and expense money.
Well, was merit always a criteria for it seemed to me that there were really faculty evaluations seemed to have come, faculty evaluating each other came kind of late in the more of a 80s. I assume there was always evaluations. The department chairman, was that?
The department chairman.
That was their function.
Yeah, that was their function. And I think in the main, they did a reasonable job of that. I didn't, they had, in all cases when we had the budget hearing, they would explain their merit increases and why they made them. And in the main, they were reasonable to me. Same for school for workers. Mm-hmm. Same thing. I'm sure that in some departments, maybe even in the school for workers, there were other factors at work that would be difficult to separate out.
But there were no set criteria. In other words, the chair didn't have to publish a list of criteria, or did the extension have a list of criteria?
No, we had the criteria centered around programming, since the nature of extension was the faculty members create their own program. In essence, you didn't have a curriculum. You created your own program. So much of that merit centered around how successful a faculty member was at creating programs. Mm-hmm. That was always what the chairman was dealing with. In that sense, it was a criteria.
And that was what you expected out of the department?
Yep.
In other words, that's how you evaluated
the department? That's the way it was. That was a philosophy of extension, I guess. I think it has some holes in it, but that's the way it was. Because mm-hmm. some faculty didn't do well at programming. Sometimes it was out of their control, but I'm sure they often lost merit because of that. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to, we may have covered this, and I just wanted to get it more directly is again organization, I guess, mm-hmm. Question. There was both, there was the School for Workers, which had a director, I guess, and then there was a Department of Labor Education, which had a chair, and I think one was elected and one was appointed or something of that nature. How did that arise? Why the two distinction?
As far as I recall, for example, Ozan was the academic chairman and the program chairman. I don't recall any other kind of splits.
Well, that came later. Maybe that was something used later on. That distinction.
It must have been. I don't recall. I can't think of any programs where the chairman, where the program chairman was not the academic chairman. There might have been some, but mm-hmm. I don't recall those. It must have been later.
Well, it was the school. Well, officially, the School for Workers was always, am I correct in this, the Department of Labor Education, and just kept the title School for Workers as
Yes, historical title.
Yeah, historical title.
Yeah, that was the academic title, was Labor Education.
And that was that also part of the 1966 reorganization?
I don't know. I suppose it was, because at the time of giving rank, you had to have something to give rank in.
I see, yeah.
I think that's the way it occurred. The School for Workers, maybe now, is a term that needs to be looked at. It'd be difficult at this point.
Well, most of these programs call themselves, they give themselves more glorious titles, like Center for Labor Research or something like that.
Well, the labor is not always identified as workers now.
Well, yes, there have been a lot of changes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. There's lots of changes since 80 years ago or whatever it was. Workers was a very appropriate title, I think, at the time. The labor unions are losing membership, though, pretty fast.
So you think there may be a need to extend the scope of the program's mission?
Or? Yeah, I think so. I think it's in another era. The labor unions are changing. The big ones, I suppose, still yield some power, but it's now difficult to form unions in certain places. There's been a major change in the last 10 years, maybe, or maybe more than that.
Yes, I don't know yet how, if the program is doing as well as it's done. My impression is that they're probably teaching as much as they ever taught before. That is, you know, in terms of numbers of courses and things like that. So there's a market for something out there.
Sure.
It may be a different mix of things.
Yeah. How many faculty members are there now?
Well, it's, I think, down to 6, actually. Oh. So it's shrunk in that in that regard.
Do you have any women?
One. Corliss Olson. I don't know if you know her or not.
No.
The school has had trouble keeping women on the staff. You any particular insight into that?
No. There weren't any women when I was there, despite the great pressure to hire women, which we did, and minorities. Which
in extension in general.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We put a great deal of time in on that. But the School for Workers, as far as I know, did not hire either during that period.
Well, in your view, what do you think was the most significant change that occurred in Extension during the time that you've been involved with Extension?
Well, I think there were several of them. One was the merger and the different kind of mission. Another major development, which was long overdue, is to treat the Extension staff as faculty, which hadn't been done before. Those were two major developments. I think a major one now that has occurred since I retired, although I supported it, is the emphasis, the switch back to the emphasis to a campus extension program.
You mean kind of decentralizing extension?
Yeah. It goes from one to the other. At the time of the merger, it was thought that the extension would have its own faculty, would have a statewide extension program. It's called a statewide extension program.
Yes.
And as I mentioned before, that caused academic problems, it caused psychological problems for campuses. And so through the years, that has slowly changed to the campuses now. As I understand it, I've been out 20 years, assume major responsibility for the academic component of the program. I don't know what kind of ties you have now with the Madison campus, but most of the other departments do have some kind of ties. And the Madison campus has a big program. Are you listed in the Madison campus program?
You know, I don't know, but I kind of doubt it. I really doubt it.
I've never seen it in there.
Yeah, I'll go look. But I don't think we've kind of remained... this was a big argument that even for setting up a Green Bay office, I don't think it applied for Milwaukee, because I think it was felt that Milwaukee was a major area of service.
Yeah.
But Parkside and when there was that move effort that, or I think at one time, this was after you had retired, I think there was even an effort to decentralize, to put the School for Workers on the Madison campus, to put myself on the Green Bay campus, to put the person on the Milwaukee campus. That never materialized.
No, but there was a big push to do that.
Yeah, but I think it was argued that it was a unique program. And that it was hard to break it up like that. But that's what's happened with the rest of Extension. That's what you're saying.
Yes. That's probably true at School for Workers. It might be. It might be true in a sense in a management institute, because they now have a major center to work from, and they work from the Madison campus too. From the Madison campus program. That wasn't true before. I think that. You ask about women, I mentioned something about women, about minorities. You haven't had a minority person.
No, not you. We did have one person for a short time, but that was after you had retired.
How are the labor unions now? What is the percentage of minorities? What percentage of blacks in Milwaukee belong to the labor unions?
Well, it's a larger percentage. Also, there's now Hispanic. Which is, I know up in Green Bay, it's quite a Hispanic community, and a lot of the old companies that I work, the union